Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. I don't know if I'm fascinated by the subject of perception because I'm interested in animal behavior and the human-animal bond, or if it's the other way around. Did my interest in animal behavior and the human-animal bond automatically make understanding differences in perception important to me? I don't know. All I know is that trying to understand the way my patients and clients perceive the reality that they share is a very important part of my work. And the more I can understand where they're coming from, the more I can help them. And sometimes it's difficult. We humans, if you haven't noticed, are rather arrogant species. And we tend to think that we've got the handle on everything. And the way we perceive reality is the one true reality. Worse, as individuals, we suffer from the overwhelming temptation to view our reality as the one true reality. Because of my interest in perception, I was immediately drawn to a review of a book called Through the Language Glass, Why the World Looks Different in Other Languages by Guy Dutcher. Think about that how we perceive the world depends on what language we're speaking. That this was a possibility isn't a new phenomenon. Sometime in the 1880s, William Gladstone, who later became Prime Minister of England, noticed that when color terminology was used in Homer's The Iliad, he primarily spoke in terms of black and white. What few times he mentioned other colors, he used them inappropriately. For example, he used the word chloros, meaning green, when he was describing people's faces or honey. And he referred to the ocean as wine dark, not blue. At that time, Gladstone and others assumed that the ancient Greeks were colorblind. But it turned out that the ancient Greeks had no word for blue. Now, of course, this raises all kinds of interesting possibilities, doesn't it? One reason they might not have any word for blue is because they didn't need it. There just wasn't that much blue around them. But another possibility that I started thinking about is that maybe they were so aware of the different shades of blue in the world around them and in nature that the word blue had no meaning. It was too vague. It was so non-specific that it didn't say anything at all. And so perhaps when Homer wrote about a wine-dark sea, he was talking about a sea that had the dark red tinges of a setting sun. In another example of the relativity of language and how it affects perception and our view of reality, the author mentioned a group of Australian Aborigines who had no words for right or left. They always spoke in terms of north and south. Now, if anyone can appreciate this phenomena, I can. When I moved up to New Hampshire many, many years ago, one of the reasons my employers didn't outfit my vehicle for large animal practice was because they knew I would get helplessly lost. I was raised in a city, weaned on right and left, turn right, turn left, turn right, turn left. I got up here, and not only weren't the roads laid out in nice little right-left grids, but everybody spoke in terms of north, south, east, and west. And naturally they would, wouldn't they? This was a rural community, a community of farmers, loggers. What use did they have for right and left? They had the North Star. Why would they say right when they had the North Star? And it was such a dominant part of their life. The stars changing, the sun rising and setting. So in that reality, right and left, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter what hand you use as long as you get the job done. And I also think back to many, many years ago when the two colors that were in vogue at the time were avocado and harvest gold. Can you imagine what goes through a farmer's mind when you describe harvest gold? It probably depends on his reality. If he's a wheat farmer, that gold will be one color. If he's here in New England and he raises a lot of pumpkins or squash, that might be a different color. If he's a fisherman, it might not have any meaning at all, or it might mean the color of the sun, or the sun reflecting off the water on a specific day, and what that tells him about what the fishing's going to be like that day, or what the weather's going to be like. So it's all perception. It changes. In different cultures, different people, different species, we all have different ideas about what these terms mean. For our dogs with their dichromatic vision, red is just a different shade of gray. I don't know what it is for cats. I don't know that anyone's done electroretinographic studies on cats. But it would seem that cats don't need a lot of color vision because they're nocturnal. They're nocturnal predators. When push comes to shove, you know, why waste a lot of energy determining whether the mouse you're after is gray or brown? So it's all relative, and it's important that we think about that. It's important we think about that when we give our animals commands or when we expect them to do something. We have to remember, we're coming from a different place. We're coming from a completely different reality. A reality filled with only a fraction of the sounds and the scents and the motion that they experience. But a world also filled with a lot more color. It doesn't make us superior, doesn't make them inferior. But if we can't even begin to understand, if we don't even want to understand that they're coming from a different place than we are, and that each one of us is coming from a different place than every other individual, and that what sharing a household means is finding a consensus. If we insist on imposing our personal, unique view of reality on those with whom we share the same space, be they members of the same species or others, we might win. But the limited view of reality that we impose on others sharing that same space might not be worth the price.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.